Hello, my name is Sruti Guttentag, and I would like to welcome you on behalf of the Jewish Legal Heritage Society to a new series of podcasts discussing Jewish perspectives on the environment. The Jewish Legal Heritage Society in Jerusalem promotes the understanding of Jewish law and its contribution to modern society. The society organizes seminars on Jewish legal sources and runs educational workshops in Israeli high schools. More information about the society is available on the internet at www.mishpativri.org.il. The organization now presents a series of three podcasts made possible by the initiative of Targum Shlishi, based in Aventura, Florida. This podcast has been dedicated to discussion of Jewish aspects on the environment and has been based on the works of Professor Nachum Rakova, Jerusalem. Professor Rakova is the former Deputy Attorney General of Israel and is a winner of the Israel Prize. The environment is an issue which occupies a large portion of world political discussion at any one time. What does Judaism have to say? How does the Torah, Jewish or religious law, see our obligations towards the environment? Then we're going to see what the environment has to offer those seeking spirituality. Finally, some practical Torah advice on how to actualize some of the environmental theory. But first, this podcast. Green. Why? There are two important questions which must be addressed when tackling the issue of the environment. First of all, do we really need to worry about saving the world? Is it so important to be green? The world talks a lot about ensuring that the world our grandchildren live in will be a pleasant one. Is this truly our concern? And then, if one finds sources for such an obligation, we still have to ask ourselves why. What is the philosophy behind these obligations? Why, in fact, is it so important that we care for the world, worry about the ozone layer, keep cities clean and burn only clean fuels? So first of all, what is our obligation? And then, why? But before answering any of these questions, there's another major philosophical point which must be clarified. Who does this world belong to, anyway? Does it belong to God? Or perhaps to man? What are our rights of usage to the world we live in? May we take liberties, any liberties we like? Or are we totally restricted from using anything? Or perhaps are we bound by some middle way? This question can only be answered by taking a look at some biblical verses. And as we're going to see, different verses indicate different answers to this question. If we open the Bible at the book of Leviticus, we find that God categorically tells us, "For the earth is mine." These words require little explanation and seem to indicate man's insignificance in world order. Yet, moving earlier to the book of Genesis, there seems to be a somewhat contradictory verse. The verse in Genesis instructs man on his use of the world and tells him, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky." So how are we to resolve these seemingly contradictory statements? Are we to have dominion over the world and its contents, or must we carefully guard and preserve the world just the way it is? And who does it belong to? Does it belong to us or to God? The answer to this question can be found by combining these two verses and their basic ideas, and by taking a look at a third verse. God, in the book of Genesis 2, tells us that man was placed on the earth in order to work it and guard it. In other words, all three ideas are true. Yes, God created the world, and it was his, and it remains his. He then handed it over to man to act as a guardian. He permitted him to make use of its resources in a way which would fit with this role as careful guardians. In conclusion, God gave man ownership of the world. He permitted us to make use of it, but he placed limits on our ownership, limits which bound us to guarding it and working it. Man's ownership is a limited ownership and not an absolute ownership. Let's return to the discussion at hand. Two questions. Must we be green? Why must we be green? Well, the world was given to us to work and to guard. These words can be very instructive. Yes, look after the world. So, Judaism does preach care for the environment. And then, why? In light of this resolution of the verses, the answer really is simple. We are only guardians of a world belonging in fact to God. So it is that as faithful guardians of a precious deposit left to our care, we must take care of the world and its resources. Let's take a little closer look at the verse we quoted earlier. These words provided indication of a limitless ownership granted to us over the world. Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky. So what does it mean to have dominion, and how are these words to be understood as part of our attitude as limited owners when the verse seemingly empowers us with unlimited powers? Nachmanides of 13th century Spain, in his biblical commentary, tells us that the expression dominion is the same expression as the one used for the dominion a master has over his slave. Does this empower us with cruelty to animals? Is our ownership over the animal world really a limitless ownership? Rav Kook was the first chief rabbi of Palestine over 80 years ago. He was a philosopher, a scholar, and a great legal authority. He gives dominion a more circumspect meaning than that which may be understood from Nachmanides' commentary. There can be no doubt, he says, that the dominion mentioned in the Bible is not the dominion of a tyrant who deals harshly with his people and servants in order to achieve his personal desires and whims. God, who himself created the world based on endless mercy and extends his mercy to all he has created, would not direct us in this manner. So what is meant? Rather, what must be understood is that we have been given an ownership over the world. We have dominion as a master over his slave. But again, this ownership has limits and bounds, and we are expected to ensure that we do not deal in a harsh or corrupt manner. Ownership, but with limits. This understanding of man's status in the world seems to express itself in another source. The Midrash discusses a verse in Ecclesiastes. Consider the work of God. For who can make straight that which man has made crooked? What do these words refer to, these works of God, which can be made crooked? The Midrash is a collection of rabbinical thought, in which the sages of over 2,000 years ago used biblical verses as a springboard for many and various teachings. It forms a vital source for wisdom and morality. The Midrash tells us that these words were uttered at a crucial point in the history of mankind. Man had just been created, and God showed him all the trees of the Garden of Eden and said to him these words, "See my works, how lovely they are, how fine they are. All I created for you." That is what is meant. Consider the work of God. And the Midrash continues, "Take care not to corrupt and destroy my universe. For if you destroy it, no one will come after you to put it right." Let's study this Midrash together. and point out some important wording. Of course, the Medrash instructs man to take care not to corrupt the world. But the Medrash introduced this with a few vital words. All I have created, I created for you. All in the same breath, the Midrash refers to the world as being the works of God and to our obligation to see to the world as being looked after. Here too we see that environmental values must be based on a realization of three facts. Number one, that the world is God's. Number two, that he gave it to us to use. And number three, that we are therefore responsible to ensure its upkeep and see that it retains its beauty. So, we have the biblical sources and some of the philosophy behind them. But is it all negative? Don't use too many world resources. Don't waste. Are our responsibilities based solely on the fact that failing to do so would be considered to be a misuse of the liberties God gave us over the world? Further study of Jewish works reveals a more positive approach to our responsibilities too. Let's recall those crucial biblical words, to work it and to guard it. These words which serve as the basis for our obligations on this earth as its inhabitants. These words perhaps imply two things. First of all, don't ruin the world or its resources. But secondly, work on advancing the world, because you've been entrusted with a task of improving it. This interpretation can be said to be based on the teachings of another verse, again in the book of Genesis. This verse too refers to those early days after creation. After describing in great detail the work of each of the 6 days of creation, the Bible tells us that God blessed the seventh day on which he rested, as hereby he had finished all that was to be done. This, however, is rather a loose translation of this verse. For someone with a more discerning eye, the text reads differently, and perhaps somewhat problematically. Asher bara Elohim la'asos, literally translated as that which God had created to do, or that which God had created to make. As if the verse were referring to some future act of doing, or some future act of making. What is being said here? What is meant? It has been suggested that here lies an important idea. And that is, that all that God created, he left somewhat unfinished. An incompletion which would allow us, mankind, to complete it. Indeed, la'asos, to make, to do, in the future. A task left for us to complete in the future. Our care for the world is such seen as a continuation of that which God himself had started. In fact, analysis of further rabbinical sources shows that the sages too stressed the positive influence that the environment can have on mankind. The sages of the Talmud expressed the effect of man's spirit of the environment in which he finds himself. They said, three things restore man's consciousness: beautiful sounds, sights, and smells. Three things enlarge a man's spirit: a beautiful dwelling, a beautiful wife, and beautiful clothing. Other references to a positive attitude to care for the environment included an interesting detail found hidden away deep in Jewish marriage law. Here, the sages noted that the environment undergoes more damage in large cities than in small towns. In explaining a Mishnah ruling which prevents a husband from compelling his wife to move from a village to a large city, the Talmud cites the reasoning of Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina, which later forms a part of Jewish marital law, and says life is more difficult in the cities. Rashi, the Talmudic commentator, explains why. Because so many people live there, and they crowd their houses together, and there is no air. Whereas in villages, there are gardens and orchards close to the homes, and the air is good. So, take care of the environment, but for two reasons. First of all, because you have to ensure that you fulfill your obligations, the conditions under which you were allowed to use the earth. And secondly, because, as the sages pointed out, we can really only have any benefit from a world which is clean and pleasant. Okay, we've gone as far as we can for the first of these three podcasts here at the Jewish Legal Heritage Society. But we'll be back with more, because in the next podcast, we're going to show a deep and spiritual side to caring for the world. And then, in the last of the series, we'll try to get a bit more practical, with some Torah tips on how to care for the environment. Thanks again to Targum Shlishi for their generous sponsorship, and thank you all for listening. Goodbye.